Thank you very much for the invitation to come and give this particular talk. So it's going to be a quick run through to set the scene for the clinical role of MG. There are a couple of disclosures just for everyone to see. From an MG perspective, it's just really working with SpeedX on the Resistance Plus assay in our clinic. So a little bit about MG. Tame said the scene is a very small bacterium. It's got a tiny genome. That means it's very fastidious. It binds with this surfactidine. It's a very important pathogenic factor for the organism. It can grow into cellular and extracellular, and it's very difficult to grow in vitro, as you know. That's impeded research until the era of molecular diagnostics. Now, the evidence to support sexual transmission is basically made of a number of points. The first of all is the high concordance rate between M. genitalium infection amongst partners. Also, when you do multilocus genotyping, 87% of co-infected sexual partners have the same MLST type. There's an increased prevalence of M. genitalium in all the high-risk groups for STIs, which you'd expect. There's an association with the number of sex partners. We know for chlamydia transmission that the risk of transmission from a man to a woman per episode of vaginal cortis is around 10 to 40%. We don't have that data for M. genitalium, but the experts believe it is going to be less than that, so probably in the region of 5 to 25%. In terms of population-based studies, again, we're lacking these, but there are three. I'm going to show you some data from here. The first one's Wave 3. It's the National Longitudinal Study of Adolescent Medicine in the USA. That was a large study of young men and women aged 18 to 27, enrolled 2001-2002, around 1% prevalence, slightly higher in the men, as you can see, than the women, and the associations, as you'd expect, with high number of sexual partners and, in the case of US, black race. Then you've got the third National Survey of Sexual Attitudes and Lifestyles, NADSEL 3 in the UK, which was a larger sample of over 4,500. I wasn't able to get the gender split here in the paper, but this probability sample was between 2010 to 2012. The prevalence here in the UK was about 1.2% in men and 1.3% in women. Again, risk factors in the UK, again, black race and number of partners and unsafe sexual practices. And then there was a smaller study in Denmark, which was undertaken between 1997 and 1998. Again, similar figures, 1.2% in men, 2.3% in women. So I'm going to cover men first before women. First of all, just to give you some sense of the importance of all of these organisms. So Neisseria gonorrhea is the most common cause of urethritis in the developing parts of the world where most of the STIs tend to reside. For chlamydia trachomatis, it's the most common pathogen associated with non-gonococcal urethritis, and M. genitalium is the main organism associated with persistent non-gonococcal urethritis following failed first-line treatment. So I've just given you some data in that graph there from South Africa just to give you some real-world ideas for men with urethritis coming into clinics in South Africa, how important gonorrhea is in that setting. Chlamydia, you can see in orange, and M. genitalium is there in green. In terms of survey studies in MSM, we know that MSM obviously have higher rates of M. genitalium, Neisseria gonorrhea, and chlamydia trachomatis infections than observed in the population-based surveys I described before. And generally, the prevalence is highest at the anorectal site, and oropharyngeal infections with M. genitalium appear to be uncommon. I've just given you two studies here, one from the Melbourne team from 2001-2002. It was amongst MSM attending SAPVs, 521 participants in that sample. You could see that for M. genitalium, there was nothing in the throat at all, highest rates in the anal area. And there's a more recent study from Debbie Caldwell as the first author lead for that from our center in Western Sydney. And here you can see that we didn't see any cases in the throat amongst 508 consecutive MSM that were screened. but there was a slightly higher rate in the urethra in our case. Now, basically, chlamydia and M. genitalium prevalence is lower amongst MSM with NGU compared to heterosexual men, because a lot of the cases of NGU in MSM are idiopathic, and we still really don't know why that is. M. genitalium is reportedly more prevalent amongst men who are co-infected with HIV. M. genitalium was first isolated from urethral samples of two men with non-gonococcal urethritis, and there have been a number of studies which have showed a consistent, strong correlation between M. genitalium presence and NGU. What we've also observed over time is that higher bacterial loads are present in symptomatic men, which makes sense because pro-inflammatory cytokines are released during infection. It's biologically plausible. An older study from David Taylor Robinson and Jürgen Jensen, they reviewed literature, and they again quoted about 15 to 25% of men with symptomatic NGU were infected with M. genitalium, compared to about 5 to 10% of those without any disease. And the odds ratio for having NGU if you were infected with M. genitalium was 5.5. What about other clinical conditions in men? Well, we have less data for all of these, but for proctitis, there's certainly growing evidence that it's important. Bisser et al. From Melbourne reported 12% M. genitalium prevalence amongst 154 MSM with proctitis. And the rectal M. genitalium bacterial load was significantly higher in the men with the proctitis compared to asymptomatic men. But we do still lack treatment effectiveness studies for this condition. For epididymochitis, it's believed M. genitalium may be a cause of acute epididymitis in some patients. However, this is not yet proven, and we do require further studies. It's a difficult area of study. There was one study by Ito et al. From Japan, which reported M. genitalium was detected in 8% of 56 cases of epididymitis in young men under the age of 40. For prostatitis, there's very sparse evidence that M. genitalium is involved with chronic prostatitis. There's conflicting studies, as you can see here. So the first one by Doble et al. Showed that there wasn't any detection of M. genitalium in prostatic biopsies from 50 patients with chronic abacterial prostatitis. But the next study by Krieger et al. Showed that M. genitalium was detected by PCR in prostatic biopsy in about 4%. There's been some studies looking at detecting M. genitalium in the semen, 2 out of 18 of patients with prostatitis. Mo et al. Reported 235 Chinese men with prostatitis and 152 asymptomatic clinic controls. That they did a lot of tests, including prostatic massage, even on the asymptomatic guys. With their particular study, they reported that the M. genitalium was positive in about 10% of men with clinical prostatitis versus 3% of the controls. So some suggestion that there might be a problem, but it's not huge. Balanoprostatitis, the only people that have made a link were David Taylor Robinson and Paddy Horner way back in 2011. There hasn't been any further evidence to suggest balanoprostatitis is linked to MGen. Moving on to women. For vaginal discharge, MGen's not thought to cause vaginal discharge, and when it is detected on a vaginal swab, it's likely to come from the endocervix. There's been no associations with other causes of vaginitis, and basically inconsistent associations with the presence of bacterial vaginosis. Urethritis in females seems only to have been studied in Scandinavia. Moy did show some association between microscopic urethritis of women in a large study, but three other Scandinavian studies failed to show association. So the jury is still out with this. One of the big problems is you need to exclude patients with concomitant cervicitis, as inflammation clearly at other sites may cause urethral contamination, false positive diagnosis. So it's a very difficult area to really get on top of. Mucopurulent cervicitis, well, here's the problem here is how do you define it with the clinical signs, mucopurulent discharge friability of the os, or whether you do cell counts or you do both using endocervical smears. because there's a generally lack of a proper case definition, it means the studies are also very difficult to interpret. But there has been a positive association between NGEN and microscopically proven cervicitis, but not only in some of the studies when you look at cervical discharge on its own. One of the issues as well is the failure in some studies to control for coexistent chlamydial infection, and certainly most of the studies haven't controlled for gonorrhea. So that makes interpretation of some of the findings difficult too. But it's generally thought that the magnitude of the increased risk of cervicitis is comparable of that due to chlamydia and gonorrhea. If we move on to PID, well, there's very long-standing evidence serologically that M. genitalium is linked or could be linked to PID. And NATS testing of endometrial and fallopian tube samples from women with acute PID has been positive in some cases. So using the molecular-based assays, there's been association with clinically diagnosed PID in many parts of the world, and also in endometritis samples in a small number of studies where the endometrium has actually been taken for analysis. But again, we have problems with study design, suboptimal specificity of the clinical signs used to diagnose PID, and we know how difficult that is to diagnose in the absence of a laparoscopy. And when you take out chlamydia or you control for co-infections, the trends and associations appear to be less important. So that's the caveat. In terms of pregnancy complications and infertility, M. genitalium has been associated with preterm birth in some studies. I'm going to show you some results from a recent meta-analysis data at the end, which does help provide a little bit more of an answer, perhaps. There's been strong correlations reported between serological evidence of M. genitalium and laparoscopically confirmed tubal infertility. And importantly, those studies also maintained that association after excluding women who were co-infected with chlamydia. M. genitalium has been detected in endocervical samples more frequently in infertile women compared to healthy women. But other studies have shown that endocervical testing is not useful in predicting actually what's happening in the upper genital tract. Experimental models have been helpful. So there's experimental monkey models and mice models using animals. And then there's fallopian tube organ cultures, which have been used as well to indicate M. genitalium can cause a problem in the upper genital tract, leading to salpingitis and endometritis. So I just wanted to show you some of these lovely pictures from this paper. In human reproduction. So at the top highlighted here, the green is the fluorescent marker, and that's indicating the presence of M. genitalium binding here to the fallopian tube endothelium, you can see. That's beautifully showing that. And then here under electron microscopy, you actually can see, first of all, on my side, uninfected control fallopian tube cultures with the nice wafting cilia on those cells. And then what happens when you start adding M. genitalium is that the fine hairs start to swell up and form tubular cilia swellings. And then basically the cilia start to get destroyed and come off the cells, as you can see in the last slide. And that little tiny thing by the arrow is the M. genitalium causing all that trouble. So finally, to bring you to the systematic review and meta-analysis, so this was published by Liz et al. In 2018, and it's well worth a read. It outlines all the major studies for you, and if you're interested in looking at any of what these studies might show, you can get all the data. So they looked at cervicitis, PID, preterm birth, spontaneous abortion, infertility. It was a very well-designed study by a team that's very used to doing these sort of systematic reviews and meta-analyses. And basically, they saw a twofold increased risk when all five conditions were examined. And when they looked at the pooled estimates, they were all significant for cervicitis, PID, preterm birth, and spontaneous abortion. But there wasn't enough data in the analysis to have a significance associated with infertility. So that kind of leads me to the conclusions for the clinical aspect of this condition that I think we all know now, living in Australia, that M. genitalium is an STI that presents many clinical challenges and Katrina's going to explain that to you in much more detail, I think, after me. The causative role in NGU, of course, is clearly established. We've now got significant associations with cervicitis, endometritis, PID, spontaneous abortion, and preterm labor, and an evidence of a non-significant association with female infertility, which obviously needs further investigation. But we still have a lot of murkiness, if you like, or lack of clarity around the role in proctitis, prostatitis, epididymochitis, balanoposthitis as well. So I think it's an area for a lot of clinical research that still needs to be done. So for budding trainees who want a nice project to look at, thinking about something to do with clinical elements around M. genitalium would be definitely worthwhile looking into. This is one of the countries with a big centre of excellence, really, around country of excellence when it comes to M. genitalium studies. So it would be great to see more clinical work going on as well as work from the lab. So thank you very much.